Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we are going to talk about sin. That's the topic for today. And actually, just a little prelude here. This came up because of a question that was posed to Donald regarding the subject of sin, which actually on Facebook, which actually created an interesting thread right there in Donald's Facebook status. So, Donald, why don't you actually kick it off by sharing with us the question that you got that you posted on Facebook that spurred the whole conversation.
Yeah. The question that I got, and I'm going to read it verbatim, is from one of my longtime friends, Tim Horton, and it says, "Without sin, do you think it is possible to have free will?" And just to give you a little a brief backstory on that, he asked this question when I posted a comic on Facebook that basically God is talking to Adam and Eve, and he's saying it's very important that you never sin. And Adam looks up to him and says, "Then maybe you should not create sin." God thinks about it for a moment, and then the last panel is him, you know, sitting there clicking through the with a flat screen TV and a remote control, drinking a soda. And you know, from that, the whole question came about. I originally answered, and we had a really good conversation between me and my friend Tim. And then I was like, you know, we're having, this is having a kind of a fun conversation. Let's post it out to my profile and make it like, see what happens and see if it gets any real traction. And I did, and boy, did it get some traction. I had friends from people from all different social circles that I work in or that I'm involved in, you know, posting and saying their ideas and whatnot, and I'm just like, yeah, this is good. And that's when I basically said, "Hey, David, this topic seems to be really popular, and we've never done it. Should we devote an episode to this topic?" And that was that.
Now, let me ask this, but I'll ask this now, and then I'd like if we could share some of the comments that were on there.
Oh, definitely.
Is there going to be a difference? Well, I suppose there is a difference between sin and good and evil.
And see, I think there is a little bit. I think it's much more subtle. It's kind of like in that episode of Good and Evil, we talked about, you know, good and bad and good and evil being two different things. Well, in the same way, bad is not always necessarily evil. And just the way that evil may not always be sin, or sin may not always be evil, and I think it's one of those that you kind of need to define more specifically. So I don't know specifically. You're going to probably ask me some questions that I'm like, oh, I have not considered that before.
Maybe so. I may not.
I have no idea. I don't think it's going to be a rehash. I think there's enough difference with sin.
Well, I wasn't worried too much about it, whether or not it was going to be a rehash of good and evil. I was just wondering if people might consider it synonymous, because I think some people would say good and evil is synonymous to sin and virtue. Some people would say no, there is good and evil, and you don't have to subscribe to the idea of sin. So in order for me not to step on some of the comments here, because I could go on and then I'll end up repeating what some of these people are saying, why don't you go ahead and share some of the comments that you got on Facebook? You don't have to share all of them, but the ones that really stood out.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to start off with my first initial comment when Tim asked me that question. And, you know, he said, "Without sin, do you think it is possible to have free will?" And my response to that was, yes. Sin is subjective, free will is not. You know, sin to a Muslim is different than sin to a pagan, yet both have free will to adhere to the religious ideals or not. And so that was my response, my initial response to it. And the first comment that we got when I reposted it to my wall is from Zach Scarangelo, and I loved the way he posted this, because, you know, he basically said, "You might as well ask the question, quote, "Without unicorns, would dogs still be cute?" unquote. It is a nonsensical question, as it presumes the existence of a sin, i.e., one must be religious in order to accept the question as a valid one. And I was like, okay. And I think that kind of set the tone for the rest of the comments. And I think you even posted in there too. Is kind of like, well, there's so much backstory, so much stuff that we have to build up to even come to the question that, you know, is the validity of sin even valid?
And, you know, what I wanted to see happen there, and it might have happened a little bit, but what I wanted to see happen more on that, with the question of the comment about without unicorns, to me, there's two parts to this whole question that was posed to you. But the first part is what he addressed, which is without unicorns, are dogs still cute? And he said, well, you have to accept that the idea of the existence of unicorns. As far as I'm concerned, that to me is an easy out if you're going to write it off and say, I don't have any belief, I'm not a religious person, or I do not subscribe to the idea of sin, because I think we have to, I don't know if we need to agree that sin is this very specific, very specifically a religious concept.
Oh, okay, hold on, so, hold on, ooh, hold on there. So before I ask you the question, I want to ask you just a basic question. Do you, David, believe in sin?
Do I believe in sin?
Yeah.
I think we need to define what that means first. Because
No. Whatever it means to you, do you believe in sin? Whatever definition you give that word.
I don't think that I don't subscribe to a very clear definition of sin, so I can't say yes or no. Okay. I'm not copping out on the answer. I'm just saying that we have to break down the concept of sin and what that means before I can truly answer that question, because I don't subscribe to a belief system that includes the idea of sin. Per se, I have to say that per se. So I can't answer that question until we break it down further.
And that's why
I will be able to.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask you the question right off the bat, because it's like, well, do you believe in sin at this moment in this broadcast? Because what normally happens for you and I in these episodes is, you know, we gain knowledge, we gain wisdom, and that maybe we didn't have at the beginning of the episode. So maybe I'll come back at the end of the episode and say, hey, David, what about now? Do you believe in sin now? Or
yeah, I think you might want to do it a little before the end, because if I go on and on, I could chew up a chicken.
So, and this goes into the second thing that you'd mentioned before I asked you that question. You know, is the term sin synonymous with religion?
I don't hear this term sin used outside of religious contexts.
Yeah.
Except in colloquialisms, and then you can't really take it too seriously if that's the case.
Yeah. And that was another comment that Zach Scarangelo had also made, is that, actually, let me just quote his first thing. It's like, sin is a religious definition of forbidden activities. And so it's like, well, if it's solely and only religious in context, then if you're not religious, as you were saying, then you can say, I don't ascribe to or perceive anything as being sin because I'm not religious. To answer the question that I asked you, it's like, you know, Donald, do you believe in sin? I'm like, yes, I do. I believe sin exists to the people that believe in it, which means people that believe in a certain religious ideals and dogma. If that religion has a concept of sin, then yes, sin exists for them, and therefore I know them, and therefore it exists for me.
Does it exist for you personally?
Only in to the extent that I just described.
I would say that isn't necessarily personal. In other words, would you, taking your own actions, mm-hmm. if you committed something that was categorically considered a sin, would you subscribe and say, I did sin? Yes.
Oh, no, of course not.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because it's like one of the seven sins, gluttony. You know, if I decide to gorge myself on food and stuff for whatever time, you know, I will not say, oh, I've sinned. You know, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, I've eaten very well. Yeah, and that's just my perspective.
Well, let's take a harsher one. Okay. Instead of gluttony, let's talk about greed.
Ooh.
The reason I say I used greed, because gluttony, you can play a little bit more with it loosey-goosey than you can with gluttony.
Yeah.
Because some people are like, I'm massively full and it feels really good. And if somebody says, aren't you being a little bit of a glutton there? You go, maybe. But if somebody says, aren't you being a little bit greedy? There's a little bit more sting to greed, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
The whole concept. So.
And that's because there's a social stigma here in the West to that, too.
But is the social stigma in the West based on a religious foundation?
Oh.
If you think about it, Western culture has so much Judeo-Christian ingrained into it,
yeah,
that can we really separate the religious concept of sin from our moral, our basis of morality? So, for example, if we're talking about greed, can you say, if it's a sin on a Judeo-Christian basis, then is it bad on just a moral basis?
And I would say no, not necessarily.
Okay.
Because the way that you presented that question is leaving it wide open for degrees of greed. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your whole life and your whole thought and everything you do is consumed by greed, then yeah, that might be unhealthy. If you occasionally want to get an extra, you know, piece of cake or pie or whatever, then, you know, I don't think that's too bad. And so I understand what you're saying, where, you know, the basis of cultural faux pas or whatnot are based on the Judeo-Christian ideas of, or largely based on Judeo-Christian belief systems, but also at the same time they're both based on legalities, and there are certain legal stuff that does not go in line with Judeo-Christian belief systems.
Okay, like speeding.
Yeah, I think we used that in the Good and Evil episode too.
Did we?
Well, we may not have used speeding directly.
Morality, maybe?
But we definitely used it in running a red light.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's true. We did use running a red light. But there are consequences to running a red light. The red lights are there to ensure that traffic flows with a certain degree of safety. And the thing is if we're looking at the safety of others, we consider running a red light a potential threat to the safety of others. So it may not it is against the law to run a red light, but it may not be a sin, or it may not be a moral infraction. However, if you ran a red light because of something you're focused on, because you were scoffing the law, and the result of running the red light ended up having you harming another person in the process, then it starts to become a question of, is it a measure of morality or a measure of sin?
So basically what you're saying is you can sin as long as it doesn't hurt anyone?
Before we answer that question, we might have to break this down a little bit about what is sin. And before we talk about what is sin, let's go to some of the other comments here, because we might be able to flesh some of this out.
Yeah, so the other part of that question is free will. And my friend Mark Taylor posted in the same thread, he said, if we were, as it were, simply shuffling the deck, free will is an illusion of choice. But if we're making new cards and changing rules, it means we create the universe with our actions. Then we become responsible for our actions and the quality of our work, no longer innocent and without blame. Then sin becomes not a question of following the rules, but a judgment on how good are the rules you make. And I'm like, that got me thinking a little bit too. It's like, huh. Okay, so going back to your whole idea of the whole question of, does it only become sin when your actions harm somebody else? From that, from what Mark was saying, it almost sounds like when you do something that is, you know, in your belief system perceived as bad or not good, that what religion would call sin, then you have a much higher probability of inflicting harm to others. Maybe. I don't know. What's your take on that?
On his comment?
Yeah.
I think that what he's doing is he's saying, well, first of all, I think that he doesn't, I get the impression that he does not necessarily believe that free will is true free will. He believes that free will is, like he said, it's an illusion of choice, which what his implication is that we don't really have any true free will, but we won't go too much into that. I know the two are tied together in the question. Maybe we can get that later. But what he says here is he's saying if we're making new cards and changing rules, it means we create the universe with our actions. I get the impression that he believes that religion is something that is man-made, that is not divinely endowed upon a human race. That if we're creating the religion, then we're creating the sin within that religion. And if we're creating the sin, then it's how well are we subscribing to that very set of rules or those parameters that define the sin. It was interesting. He was saying, okay, if we're coming up with the idea of sin, what is arbitrary sin? What is not? Like, for example, if you look at the Ten Commandments have some big ones, you know, that shall not commit murder. That's a huge one.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're looking at Mark's comment, that's a pretty good rule.
Yeah.
But then if you go to some of the Leviticus stuff, which is, I can't remember, you can't mix cloth, for example.
Yeah.
You can't mix different types of fabric. How good of a rule is that one, really? And I think that's what he's saying. He's saying it doesn't. If you say there's a rule that says I shall not mix fabric, and you mix fabric, what is the impact of it? I think that's what he's talking about. He's talking about if you're going to make up rules that sin is based on, let them be big ones and let them make sure that they make a really big difference if you're going to adhere to them, that they're life changing for you and for everybody else involved.
Yeah. So is the word sin basically a religious way of saying evil, or is it a religious way of saying bad, or both?
Well, first of all, we have to talk a little bit about God because we're talking about religion.
Yeah.
And I don't know about religions that don't include God or some form of God or divine power.
Oh, really? Buddhism?
I don't consider Buddhism a religion, personally.
Oh, okay.
I consider it a belief system, but I don't consider it a religion.
Hmm.
I know that there's gray areas on Buddhism. Buddhism, I do believe, embraces a certain spirituality, and it's just acceptance of isness. But, yeah, we could get really sidetracked with that. But Buddhism also doesn't talk about sin, so we throw that out, okay?
Okay, gotcha.
So we're talking about sin, and we're talking about the Big Kahuna, and I believe that sin is an affront to the Big Kahuna.
Okay.
Sin is an affront to God. That's kind of what I look at it. And basically, people apparently didn't know what was an affront to God, so God had to say, let me spell it out for you. This is what's an affront to me. And so that's kind of what I say sin is. So then we'd have to go into what that means.
Let me try and save us a whole bunch of time and kind of short-circuit it to possibly where we might end up at in the future. And then if we don't, we can take the long road. But what sounding like from what we've talked about in previous episodes, basically anything that is an affront to God is basically anything that makes God mad, but it's all from the perception of man, from humans, from our brains. So maybe what it is, if we say it a different way, is basically, a sin in religious terms is something that disconnects you from your feeling connected to source energy, to feeling connected to God.
Isn't that what we defined as evil, though, in the Good and Evil episode?
Ah, but see, this is what I'm saying. Is sin always evil?
Well, if you're an atheist, then no.
If you're an atheist, you know, do you have a concept of evil and sin?
Well, there's atheists that would tell you, I have a concept of right and wrong.
Well, yeah, but that's not evil and sin.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that that evil implies some kind of subscription to a set of ethics that are tied to a theology.
Yeah, and basically anything that goes against those ideals of that theology, of that belief system, is going against your connection to God, therefore is a sin.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense.
So, whereas if you break the speed limit, you know, speed limit's 45 and you go 50, then you're technically breaking the law, the legalities, which most people would consider a bad thing, but I think a lot of people would not go as far to say as that's being evil or that was a sin.
Well, yeah, because they say, I ran a red light and I didn't hurt anyone, so no harm done.
Yeah, which goes back to one of my other questions. It's just like, okay, so where did these Ten Commandments, where did these ideas of sin in these various religions come from? You know, it's kind of like what Mark was saying. Sin becomes not a question of following the rules, but a judgment of how good the rules are that are you make, and to paraphrase, that are made. So where did these various religions come up with the idea that, oh, you do this and it's a sin, but this is okay, and then you go over to this other religion and it's like, oh, no, 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 that's a sin, but it's okay to do this. You know, is it just from their culture that they you know, evolved from, or what, is it something that was more of a health, an overall health thing, or, you know, if we want to go from another perspective, was it more of a power thing?
Well, I'll tell you my take on this. In studying the Abrahamic systems of monotheism, which is Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all based on the Abraham, the guy, that guy who was going to kill his son, and God said, oh, yeah, psych. You remember that whole story?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, in researching those, I came up with this idea that those religions, and I think to a degree religions in general, serve three, what makes them take, what makes people drawn to them is if they serve people in a certain way. Number one, it gives them a cosmology. It says this is how the world is created. Hmm. It actually gives them a set of rules, and I think it's when we're talking about sin. Sin is, part of the rules are, is if you break these rules, you have sinned.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is that it, what was the third one? There's the rules of sin, and it gives them a sense of purpose. There is a purpose in that. And if you have one of those three, you're starting to form a religion. If you have all three, you've got a great trifecta for a religion. But then there is a function of the religions that is not intended, but as a result. A lot of people argue with me saying, religion bad, don't stick up for religion. But I am going to stick up for a unifying belief system that really works well and holds the test of time, because it has a way of drawing a group of people together and preserving them under a common, and creating a unity within those people together. It's a good, solid religion that really speaks to people. What it does is it allows people to recognize the interconnectedness with each other. And with that, the community is kind of built on that. So you're asking me, what's the whole deal with this sin? Why these sins? And I say why those sins in those religions is because those sins ended up working against people serving and recognizing the interconnectedness with each other.
Gotcha. So basically, we could have a religion of Starbucks coffee drinkers.
Well, yeah. If it did serve to create a true, profound recognition of our interconnectedness, of our oneness as a species, as a people,
or gave us something to do in the morning or an afternoon. I don't know. Oh, yeah.
Well, to me, drinking Starbucks coffee is a sin. So
yeah,
just because I think it's awful.
Well, yeah, you do your own coffee, and you do pressed coffee, or
I roast my own beans.
Oh, roast your own beans. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But even so, there's places I like that there are coffee shops I like. Starbucks just is very bitter to me.
Yeah. So maybe that's how it happened, where, you know, somebody had been doing something on their own for so long, like you roasting your own beans, and then, you know, travelers or whatever said, oh, that's good. This is really good too. Try this. And like, oh, no, we don't like that. That's not anywhere near as good. And like, And then they took that as an offense. Like, how can you not like this? This is some of the best stuff in the whole wide world. Like, no, it's not. This is better. And like, you know, it turns into a Hatfields and McCoy type thing. And, you know, just with Christianity, that's kind of like Christianity breaking off into different belief systems, like the Lutherans and the Methodists and the Catholics and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so
well, I think the Catholics have a kind of interesting insight to the idea of sin, because if you ask a Catholic what is hell, well, it depends on the Catholic you ask, but what I've been told by Catholics is the idea of what is hell is the absence of God. They don't say that hell is this fire and brimstone where the worm never dies and the fire never quenches, which is a Baptist Sunday school teacher used to tell us all the time. Where a worm never dies, the fire never quenches. I obviously went in Texas. It was Texas that I went to this Baptist Sunday school. So, yeah, the accent's there deliberately. Quit looking out the window. I told you to be quart. Yeah, it's true. People in Texas are saying, I don't know what's weird about the way he's saying that.
Yeah, I know. I know.
What's wrong with being quart? So I mean...
What's wrong with being quiet? Quiet.
Yeah, I got winders. Everybody's got winders. So
you do that accent so well.
That was
it.
Brother Dan. I'll never forget it. He had a short sleeve polyester shirt with massive pit stains and this brown polyester jacket. And he had the horn rim glasses and the comb back hair. And he would point, but the tip of his finger had a little bit of a crook to it. So he wasn't really pointing very straight. And he would, you know, of course, he was a Baptist, so everything was yelling, and he was a Southern Baptist. So. Anyway, but the Catholics say that there's the absence of going away from Brother Dan. The Catholics say that that hell is the absence of sin. They don't say it's some place with pitchforks and, you know, hot embers and bad barbecues. So hell is the absence of God, then sin has to me correlate somewhere. Maybe these systems that came down were the idea that this is what's going to get you further away from God if you do these things, which we'll call sins.
Oh, but see, there's a problem there, because if we take the individual specific ideals and dogma out of each particular religion and only find the commonalities that exist within every religion, then wouldn't it suffice to say that those core beliefs or those commonalities in every religion are probably what is more likely to disconnect you from connection with God or source energy or the universe, and therefore would be, in religious terms, a sin? I guess to say it a different way, we're talking about sin as a way of taking you farther away from God.
Okay.
So if that is what sin is, and different religions have different ideas of what is a sin, then there's also some commonalities between certain religions of what is sin. Is there like universal ideas of sin that will take you further away from God, regardless of whether you believe in God or not, or bring you farther away from spiritual self than whatnot, take you further away from source energy, depending on, you know, whatever terminology you want to use?
Maybe there might be. I mean, murder is one of the top ones. You can't seem to swing a rope with a brick around it around the room without hitting someone or some belief system that says murder bad.
Aztecs liked it.
That wasn't murder.
Well, to us,
that was sacrifice.
Oh, but see, that to us, the sacrifice was murder of human beings, which a lot of us, especially now from this perspective, are kind of like, that was murder.
You know what's interesting about this? And let's talk about this for a second, because this is one of the biggies. Murder is like one of the biggies. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, you can't murder anybody. But then again, I was in a psychic development group, and the teacher in there said sins were were malleable and subjective to the degree that you had to really understand what the terminology, which is, he said, it didn't say that thou shalt not kill. It says that thou shalt not commit murder. So what he was saying is that there are times where killing would not necessarily be considered murder and would not necessarily be considered part of original sin or, you know, I don't know, revisited sin or whatever it is, but sin. So he was saying that murder is a sin, but killing may not necessarily be a sin. If you kill someone in defense of somebody who's threatening to take the life of your child, most people, of course, they say, well, it was self-defense, and a lot of people can walk away as a result of that. I killed him in self-defense. Mm-hmm. So the courts say, well, you know what, we're going to acquit you in that because we understand that you were preserving your life. It was him versus me. But murder is basically where it's, you're going to kill somebody. They don't have any say over it. It's not supported by the societal structure, where Aztecs, that was supported by the societal structure. Human sacrifices that has been carried out over, since the dawn of humanity, and it was a very deliberate function. They believe that the firstborn in these ancient civilizations, especially like the early, like, you know, Middle East areas, that when you had a child born, that child was half God. That child was endowed with godness. And the thing is the god became weaker unless you sacrificed that firstborn and returned the mana or god energy back to that god. So it was considered a good thing. And then, of course, things changed when the religions changed and stuff like that. So, I mean, now murder is not murder for those who believe in capital punishment.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're saying the difference between murder and killing, depending on which translation you actually read of the Bible, is, it's like murder is, you know, Charles Manson going around saying, I'm right. loving this. Yeah. And killing is basically, well, you know, we've been raising the pig out on the farm for a while and it's time to eat. So,
well, yeah. I would say go, if you're talking about humanity, because nobody really talks about murdering animals except for the hardcore vegans and some of the vegetarians and some of the Buddhists. It depends. Doesn't matter. But for humans, it's saying if you're killing somebody and it is for the function and betterment of society, then it is not a sin. If you're killing somebody and it's for your own selfish reasons, yeah, we're going to call it sin.
There's a problem with that, though.
What is it?
Because if you said if it's not for the betterment of, or if it's for the betterment of society, then it's, you know, more okay than, you know, if it's not. Well,
they don't call it murder when it's for the betterment of society.
Well, the problem that we start having there, and this is, I think, where legalities come in really helpful, is because different people have a lot of different ideas of what is helpful for society or for the betterment of society. If that was the only gauge where, you know, we saw that murder was a sin or whatnot, I think a lot of politicians probably wouldn't be alive at the moment. I mean, so is that the only way to discern between murder and, you know, just killing? Or, you know, is there something, is there more to that? Is there that and something else? Or is it, this is pretty much it?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask yourself, why is murder an affront to God?
For me, I look at it as, if you're murdering and enjoying it, then that's an affront to God, because naturally I have a belief, and I think a lot of science backs this up, but don't quote me on that, is that everybody is naturally good and wants to live a happy and peaceful life, per se, for the most part. And if you're getting enjoyment by harming other people, then that, if that's your level, if that's your happiness and of life, then that is so abnormal to the majority, and it's an affront to the majority, then I think that's why it's kind of considered like, murder is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas killing, it's just like, hey, we're going to go defend our country. So you're in the military, you're a warrior, you kill. You don't necessarily, You know, well, if you want to get into big semantics with definitions, then, you know, any kind of killing could be, or any kind of murder could be considered killing, but is every kind of killing considered murder?
Right.
Yeah. But I think we've defined what we're talking about between those two ideas right there.
Well, I mean, look at these seven deadly sins. So we've got, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, sloth, and wrath. That's kind of like anger, but it's wrath, jealousy, wrath, envy, gluttony, greed.
I got it.
Sloth, and there's one more pride. That has to do with it's pride.
Pride, yeah. Okay, seven deadly sins.
Yeah.
Pride, envy, gluttony, lust, anger, greed, and sloth.
Yeah. Okay. Lust. That was the one I was trying to think of.
No, you said lust.
I did?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to overlook lust.
You said lust. I think the first.
So if those are the seven deadly sins, and for some reason they're deadly, I think it's because they're saying it's the death of the soul.
Ah.
So now those, I don't know if those seven deadly sins are necessarily spelled out in any religious context. I think that you can associate them to religious mores, but those are considered, in quotes, the seven deadly sins, and we'll have to post in the show notes maybe the origin of that. But what makes those sins? I mean, those are considered sins. Like you were saying, you said it earlier that gluttony was considered a sin, and it doesn't always seem so bad. But why? Why was gluttony considered a sin?
Well, the thing is, I wanted to make sure we got all seven sins when you're naming them off. And what this website says is, you know, very briefly, gluttony is an inordinate desire to consume more than that which one requires. So basically what it's saying is you want to consume way, 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 way more than your body needs or anything like that. And this is kind of going on what I was talking about before, where if your whole thoughts, if your whole day, if every part of your being on throughout your whole experience of every minute of every day is focused on this one idea, this one thing, such as one of the seven deadly sins, then how can you be connected? Because, you know, I think they're called deadly, like what you said, a death of the soul, or I look at more as, to use a different terminology, a disconnect from source energy, a disconnect from, you know, God's love. That's just a different way of saying the same thing.
I'm going to challenge you on this.
Okay. Ooh,
I'm not going to challenge what you're saying. I do see what you're saying about the disconnect. In other words, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is using the gluttony as an example.
Mm-hmm.
If you spend an inordinate amount of time focusing on satisfying this hunger, that when you're not really even hungry anymore, that could create a detriment to the social fabric around you. However, you're saying that if you spend an inordinate amount of time in the state, and if we're going to look at the whole God and religious thing and take it as you will based on your belief, the quote is, all sins are equal in the eyes of God.
Mm.
So if that is the case, if all sins are equal in the eyes of God and we want to give it even the tiniest bit of credence that there may be a fact to that, then what you're saying is you've got to spend a lot of time thinking about or being gluttonous, where this quote would say, anytime you're gluttonous, even just for a second, it's sin.
Mm. And see, I disagree with that. I'd hope a lot of people would too, because what's the exact quote again?
All sins are equal in the eyes of God.
Okay, all sins are equal in the sight of God. Well, and that goes back to the definition of, you know, what is a sin. And I think it's beginning to sound like what we're defining sin as is anything that disconnects you from your connection to the spiritual, to a positive spiritual, to God, to the universe,
to
source. You know, terminology, use which one works best for you, you know. So if sin is defined as inordinate or an overwhelming preoccupation with something, which I guess a word that kind of encompasses all that together is like an addict. You know, if you're addicted to food, or you're addicted to sex, or you have anger issues, or you're addicted to greed, or, you know, any of these other ones, you can say, if you put in the word addiction, I think that is very succinct right there, because that does what we're saying is removing you and disconnecting you further and further away from your connection with God and source energy.
I don't think we can slide the scale so easily.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but let's say, for example, what you're saying is that the serial killer is worse than the one-time murderer. And people would say, oh, yeah, of course, because they've killed more people. But tell that to the person whose child got murdered by the person who murdered only one person. You have a guy, he murdered only one person. It was a child. And then you have the parents of the child, even an adult, doesn't matter. All the loved ones of the person who got murdered, they're not thinking about all the other people necessarily. They might be. But that is cause of reverberation of pain. And to me, it's like you get a do-over every second. Every second you get a chance to make it right. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is what you're saying is you're just repeating the number of seconds to make it right, and you're making it worse and worse. I don't know if you're making it worse and worse. You're just carving deeper and deeper game trails that make it more difficult to recompense. Like, for example, if you're using the idea of the people who go through Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program, one of the 12 steps is to basically make sure to atone with the people that you have wronged in your process. And it's to say wronging one person, wronging 10, wronging 100. 100's worse than 10, and 10's is worse than 1, but not to the 1. To the 1 is like, I got wronged. And then they just have another bunch of other people they can agree with. Oh, so did I. But it's more so the idea is that the only thing that seems to make it a greater sin, it's really more so to me, is that that person who has to atone just has to do it many more times and much more often in order to get to a place where they're like, okay, now I can move on. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so that's why you're saying, you know, all is sin in God's eyes.
Yeah,
or all sin is equal in God's eyes.
All sin is equal in God's eyes is the quote. And I don't know that I subscribe to the idea of sin, but if we're looking at morality and right and wrong and all this other stuff, I would say that you do something wrong, you do something wrong. It you know, nothing changes that. Depends on, we can talk about right and wrong all day long. Let me not trip over myself. Let's just embrace the whole concept. if you commit a sin, if you do something wrong, that episode was doing it wrong. And that stands in and of itself in that incident. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You may do 100 sins, but each of those 100 sins is a sin in and of itself.
Gotcha.
So that I'm saying, yeah, you know, and why is one better than the other? Jack and I just watched a beautiful movie, and it's actually based off a book called The Kite Runner.
Kite Runner, okay.
Have you heard of this movie?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
It's a beautiful movie. And in the movie, what made me think of that movie? Oh, in the movie, the father is talking to the son, and the father says, he was talking about religion. He says, religion's ridiculous. It just gives people a chance to make them think they're better than everybody else. And he says, they're talking about all these sins and all this. This is a Muslim nation too, by the way. It's set in Afghanistan,
okay,
at this point in the story. And he says, there's only one sin. It's stealing. And every other sin is just basically a version of stealing. And he's saying that you're basically stealing another person's opportunity to make an honest and informed choice or decision.
I'd have to think about that one for a little while. Apply the idea of stealing to every possible person's opportunity that I can conceive of.
Well, the example used is lying is stealing. Lying is stealing because you've robbed a person of the right to truth.
Oh.
Of what is their inalienable rights in free will. So it's interesting that I didn't even put all that together. But that's an interesting tie to the guy's question in the beginning where he says, without sin, do we still have free will?
Yeah.
But maybe the question is, with sin, does it rob us? Does it rob a person of free will? I don't know that it robs a person of free will, but I think you impede upon their liberty.
Yeah, because within the example that you were giving right there, if you lie to somebody, then you steal their opportunity to know the truth. If it's important and it's something they base their life decisions on, then it affects their life from that point on. And it's either to their betterment or to their detriment. So, I mean, this is one of the things that I commented on in my in Tim's original post. We were talking about stuff and commenting back and forth, and he said, universally, there is sin, right? Even go if it goes by another name. And I went on and I did a bunch of I did a bunch of talky talk type stuff, and I said, there's a difference between legality, man-made laws, and sin, religious-made laws. And then my last line was kind of like, since man can never know the will of God, he makes laws that are defined for a perceived betterment or detriment to a people or culture. And that goes back to what Mark was saying, where, how well the rules work in whatever you decide is a sin or not sin is a gauge of, how well your ideals are
Work to what
to
end?
let you. Exactly, though. That's the point. To the in my opinion, it's a betterment or detriment to of a people or culture. See, now I'm getting in my personal issues here, where
Let's go.
a
Go for
lot
it.
of the religious belief, a lot of the beliefs I have in why people love religion is because, well, for one, they don't want to go out and define what their own life, what their own ideas of sin and God are, because it takes a while and it's pretty heavy stuff. They like to be force-fed that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, I see religion as being a source of happiness and contentment, and community and whatnot for a lot of people that may not have had that had they not been in the religion. So it's kind of like from a sociological perspective, yeah, religion's okay. From a logical, is it helpful from a psychological way? No, it's very it's not good at all. And a lot of my beliefs of religious dogma and whatnot is that it does psychologically take away your power, which would be taking away your free will. That's kind of my view, my personal view on it, as opposed to a more trying to be objective and whatnot. So, yeah, this is where you say, Donald, do you believe in sin? I'm like, no, I still don't.
Not for you personally.
No.
So what inspired your friend to ask that question? Was there something that motivated him as far as that goes, or was it just a kind of a he was waxing philosophical?
You want me to read his mind in the
No, I
past?
didn't know if you knew a backstory to that, or if there was a conversation you have that leaded to it, or if he was just awake at night thinking about it and thought, "Ah, Donald thinks about this stuff. Let me ask him."
Well, he knows I've thought about this stuff for years and years and years, and the entirety of the time that I've known him, I have been interested in the paranormal and metaphysical. So he does know that, but I think the reason he brought up was the comic strip that I had posted. He probably found it slightly offensive, but he wanted to be diplomatic, and at the same time, this is what he came up with. And so I was like, that's pretty good for the most part. And this is just me totally, Tim, if you're listening, this is just me totally guessing what you're doing. Or, maybe this was something that this is a question that had been rattling around in his head for a little while, because friend Mark that we had quoted earlier, he posted this on one of his pages on Facebook too, and one of his friends had said, "Oh, I've been thinking about this for the past 3 days." So maybe this is
About sin itself or about sin with free will?
probably about sin or free sin and free will.
Okay.
So to answer your question, you know, why did he ask me this? It may be a philosophical question that's just going making its way around like a virus, like the cold virus flu virus.
What if I were to say this? Because at first, before I make my statement, the thing that troubled me about that question when it was first posed is he said, is without sin, do we have free will? Was that, am I paraphrasing that right?
He said, without sin, do you think it is possible to have free will?
Okay. What troubled me about that was is that it implied that the existence of sin had a direct influence of whether there was free will or not. You see what I'm saying? I didn't care for it. I thought there were two disparate concepts. I'm like, how are sin and free will tied together? It doesn't make any sense to me. The implication there is if it says, if without sin, is it possible to have free will? That's almost like saying, with sin, it is impossible to have free will. And I'm like, well, I don't understand how – there's too many implications and assumptions that are made there that I would have to agree with first, not even about the concept of sin, but that one affects the other. In that way, that one is a result of the other, that free will is a result of sin one way or another. But as I think about...
Free will is a result of sin?
Well, that's the way I looked at the question originally.
Okay, gotcha.
Because
gotcha.
It says, without sin, is it possible to have free will? I'm like, well, what are you saying with sin is going on then?
Gotcha,
you see?
Gotcha.
So the question bothered me on that regard. But then as we have this conversation and as I think about it, free will and sin seem to be implicitly tied together, kind of based on the quote of the from that movie, which is that if a sin, to me, sin, if we're going to talk about it from this degree, is when you impinge upon somebody's true expression of liberties, which is free will, true allowance for them to live freely and be free in their decisions, their choices, and their lives. Fully informed.
Okay, now I have a question for you right there. I mean, the topic is sin, but would we also say that that is being bad or evil?
Well, I think sin and evil kind of are cousins of sorts.
Well, yeah, of course.
Really close cousins. I don't know that they're synonymous. I think that they would be synonymous to some degree because evil is another idea of us disconnecting, either the disconnect from God or the separation of the recognition and expression of the oneness between all human beings and all things.
Gotcha.
Then so maybe.
So okay, I got a question. You'd said that a sin is basically robbing somebody or stealing from somebody their opportunity for what was the last? How did you say the last part?
An expression of their liberties.
Which
is free will.
So, the example that we used earlier is that if you lie to somebody, you don't give them an opportunity to know the truth,
right,
which is something that you said is a right of every person.
Right.
But that is subjective right there. That's believing that just as you may not believe that something is a sin, such as going 5 miles over the speed limit, believing something is right is subjective to your beliefs and cultures as well. For example, if you have a parent who tells their children that there's a Santa Claus and Easter Bunny, well, we know that there is not a Santa Claus or Easter Bunny in the way that the parents are saying it to it. They're saying to their children. So therefore, they're lying to their children and stealing their opportunity for knowing the truth. And therefore, every parent who tells their children about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny would be, quote-unquote, committing a sin.
Okay, then I'd have to go be dangerously tangential to be able to feel that question.
Okay.
Are you willing for me to do that?
Go for it.
This far into the episode? Okay.
We have time.
The idea there is that the Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, they are myths. In Western culture, myths are synonymous with fiction and with lies. In more ancient cultures, myths were more a story and an allegory to talk about a deeper reality and a deeper truth.
Okay.
And unfortunately, what we've happened is when we've made characters out of the beauty in these myths. And the thing is, when we make caricatures out of them, we remove them from ourselves to a great degree. Santa is about complete and utter charity for children. That's the myth of Santa Claus. When it goes from being real to not real anymore, we've all of a sudden just sold out the whole beautiful truth that is beneath that whole concept. The truth that somebody actually did exist that created these acts that that story is based on, you see. So I think that when we caricaturize it, then we're lying and we're doing a great disservice by making this just a silly little story rather than allowing the children to continue to believe that there is a reality that that is based on, that is magical and full of value. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that too abstract?
No, no, no. It makes perfect sense. So if a religion or a religion evolves in some way where it starts lying to its adherents, that would be considered causing a sin to, for whoever started that. It's kind of like starting a rumor. If you start a rumor and it becomes a belief and then all of a sudden it becomes, you know, almost like a fact, then you've created a huge sin for the whole religion. But going back to kind of like what I was, the idea I was going on earlier, is there ever a time where you lie to somebody to protect them that would be considered in their best interest that they would not have done otherwise?
I think it's a selfish decision to say that. I think to say, I know what's better for you than you, and I don't trust you to be able to make a very informed, valid decision, even if it's through a mistake and through the experience that that mistake would give you. That is to say, that to me is not giving somebody the benefit of the doubt. It to me, it's presumptuous to say, I know better, so I'm lying to that person because I know what's better for them than they know what's for them. How can we know what's better for another person if we're not living their exact experiences?
So suicides, people that are suicidal, if you can lie to them and convince them to live another day or another week or another year, is that better or is that worse?
I think it's short-sighted because the presumption or the assumption there is that the only way to help them preserve their lives is through a lie. And I just think that a lie is a house of cards no matter how you slice it.
Yeah.
I'm serious, and I really do not like lying. I don't like lying. I'm not comfortable with it, and I'm not good at it to the degree that I had to spin a bunch of lies to surprise Jackie on her 50th birthday, and I said, I'm not surprising her anymore. I cannot handle it. Just those lies to be able to make to pull the surprise off and have her be surprised stressed me out so badly. And yeah, you could say, well, there were harmless lies. Well, I didn't like it. The harm was just to me. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I'm going to take that. And as far as I'm concerned, yeah, no. A lie is a lie is a lie. That's as far as I'm concerned. It is stealing the opportunity from someone to make an informed decision on their own. And it also implies that you have no trust for them.
And see, I have to say that I'm kind of on the fence here, because I believe that just the way that you say certain things can have a huge impact on them. Because, well, okay, let's say like master manipulators, people that their whole idea is to manipulate. They may not be technically lying, but they're redirecting your attention to focus on something else so that you're not focusing on whatever, on the truth.
Then they're lying.
Oh, so basically...
Because it's the end result is the same. The end results are the same is this, because ask yourself why people lie. People lie because they are trying to influence what choice you make or how you think or how you react. And when people are manipulating, they're doing the exact same thing, but they're just trying to say, well, I didn't lie to you. I'm like, no, what you did was you were trying to gauge and control me. And I'm like, when is that good? I don't like that. So I'm sorry. As far as manipulating and that kind of stuff is lying, as far as I'm concerned. Because it's lying because your true intentions are not put out there.
So
you're trying to guide a person to believe something other than what your true intentions are.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask you that question again. From your feeling and definition of what your personal definition of what sin is, do you, David Deere, believe in sin?
I believe in, kind of like you, the perception of sin.
Gotcha.
Okay, and I'm gonna leave it with this. This is going to be my wrap-up to say this. Adam and Eve are supposedly the ones who are responsible for original sin. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Everything was good until they bit into the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
They didn't bite into the tree. They brought into the fruit.
That's true. They didn't. They weren't the Yule Gibbons of the creation myth. Okay. Thank you for correcting me on that. They bit into the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And I'm going to tie this to what I said about Santa, the whole Santa Claus thing, is that when we take that as fact, we're doing ourselves a great disservice. When we take it as just a myth, we're doing ourselves a great disservice. The reason I say that is because my belief that what is being said in that allegory or in that myth or in that story, whatever you want to say, that when humanity, and Adam to me is synonymous with humanity's evolution in consciousness, mm-hmm. when we evolved in consciousness to discern comfort and discomfort as being equivalent to right and wrong, when we saw basically things as bad and things as good, when we started recognizing things in a sense of polarity between good and bad, between right and wrong, between good and evil, that is what created the sin. It wasn't that the sin was always there. It was us saying, oh, this is bad, this is good. I think animals don't do the bad and good game. They just basically say, I'm going to respond to my environment, and I'm going to play the role in nature that I've been endowed with. Where human beings saw ourselves as separated from nature, and then saw nature as doing bad things by killing them in fires and floods and starvation and all these other things, rather than saying, oh, well, you know, if our population is disseminated, this is kind of, we're part of nature. We're all involved in this big piece of puzzle together. So that's where I think what original sin is. So to me, sin is our concept and recognition and definition, kind of like what your friend Mark said, of what is wrong and what is right and what is good and what is evil. And it's a sliding scale, and it is personal. If it's institutionalized, we're just adopting what the institution has given us, but it's still intensely personal.
So, if possible, can you answer the question that was posed, without sin, do you think it's possible to have free will?
Without sin, is it possible to have free will? I think without sin, we have endless and boundless expressions of free will, more in a more limitless way than we recognize now.
Okay, because I'm going back to the whole idea that if you lie to somebody, you steal their ability to know the truth. And there, it sounded like at that when you were talking about that you're just like, oh, then yeah, you are taking someone's free will away.
Mm-hmm. And then I say that for this to all tie in together, free will is the exact same thing as divine expression.
So being able to have free will is equal to expressing your divinity.
Expressing divinity, yeah.
Oh, expressing divinity, not necessarily yours, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, because okay. True divinity doesn't have a yours and mine. It just is.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. And
well, what about you? What
no,
have you got?
We're good. We're good.
You sure?
No, I'm good.
It would be a sin if you didn't
I
give
know,
up.
I know. I'm teasing.
I had to
okay,
do that.
So hit me with a question.
Has your perception of sin changed in any way from the beginning of this, from when the question was first posed to now?
Not as much. No, not really. I see what you're saying with the whole idea of free will and keeping somebody else. But the thing is, regardless of what someone else does to somebody else, such as lying to them and keeping the truth from them, that person has to make the choices that are available to them at any given moment. In most situations, we have more than one choice at any given time, most of the time, not in all situations, obviously.
Right.
So therefore, it goes back to the responsibility of the person making the choice, even though they were given faulty information. So they still have free will to make the choice that they want out of the multiple choices that are available to them, even if one of those choices was presented on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's basically free will is still free will. A sin is basically furthering of, or disconnecting of yourself from divinity, from God, from the universe, from source energy. Mm. So that's mine.
Okay, cool.
Cool. So, David and I would like to thank you very much for listening to this episode. If this is your first time listening to this episode, if this is your first time listening to this episode, hope you liked it. No, if this is your first time listening to us at Take the Red Pill, we hope you've enjoyed it. If you're a longtime listener, thank you again for keeping up with us and, you know, allowing us to expand your mind and, you know, have a little conversation with you in your brain.
And as you could tell, we love getting feedback. The conversation that we had today was great. It was based on some great topics that were introduced to us on Facebook, where you can find us at facebook.com/TTRP podcast. So we'd love for you to leave a comment or a status or anything on our Take the Red Pill podcast or our Take the Red Pill Facebook page. And you can also leave comments on our website under, along with each episode, right in the episode show notes there, which is at taketheredpillpodcast.com, ttrppodcast.com, if you will. You can also, please, we'd love for you to leave also a rating and a comment for us on iTunes, where you can give us 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 stars, and you can say a little synopsis of what you think of the whole podcast in general. We would love to hear from you.
Definitely, definitely. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, leaving you with the thought of, what is a sin in God's eyes?
And I'm David Deere. You'll know what's right by your connection through your heart.